You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Cancel each other
out. You know
out.
What's going down, man?
Don't want to get some phase going on.
Yeah, it'll do it a little every now and then. That's no big deal.
Yeah.
Okay, are you ready?
I guess so. Yeah, sure.
Tommy Starr hanging out with you on the Sound Atlas. And in the studio with me tonight, Mr. Jeremy Grogan or...
Jay Spade.
Of course, you know right off the bat, we have to know where Jay Spade came from.
The name?
The name, where it came from. Did you make it up? Did somebody give you that name?
Okay, that's a little bit of an interesting story. In the early 80s, around 83, 84, I was living in Greenville, South Carolina, which is a pretty big city. And, you know, I had been... getting into hip hop before moving down there, but once I got there, I was kind of surrounded by it. So I was doing everything, breakdancing and doing graffiti, and had started DJing. And at that time, I started rapping. I'd been writing raps, but I wasn't actually saying them. But then somebody that I was hanging out with got me to actually saying them. And then I started getting on everybody's nerves because I was one of those people that just rapped everything that they said. You know, a conversation with me was just a rap song all the time. So anyway, the name. All right, there was this guy called Snake. Pretty cool guy, because he was like this bodybuilder, did karate, all this stuff, but he had a tattoo of a cobra on his back.
Uh-huh.
And like when he flexed his back, it was like the hood of the cobra like spread out. It was pretty awesome. Anyway, so me and there was this other guy called Jeremy, but everybody called him Frank, but he and I were outside rapping one day, and like I said, this was early 80s. This was before the Beastie Boys and everything, and so nobody really knew of any white rappers, and I was naive enough to think that I was the only one alive. I'm the only white person who can do this. But anyway, so this guy Snake heard us out there rapping. And he was tripping off me being a white guy rapping. And he said, you're just a little Spade like the rest of these guys. Well, he didn't say guys. He said something else. But anyway, so all my friends in the neighborhood started calling me Little Spade.
Uh-huh.
Then one day my dad told me the racial connotations to the word Spade. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, I don't want to be called that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, at the time, my rap name was Sergeant Rock from the comic book. But then a few years later, in high school, I was wanting to change my name, and I was flipping through my old yearbook from South Carolina. And there was somebody had, signed my yearbook, and they had addressed me as Lil Spade. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that name. So I was real into black history and, you know, black consciousness and everything at the time. So my idea was to take the name Spade and try to turn it into something positive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where that came from.
So somehow J is in Jeremy?
J is for Jeremy. That's it. Okay. You know, I took the name of Spade and just added the J to it just to personalize it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So J Spade was born.
Yeah, that's where that comes from.
So how far are you saying back in the early 80s? How old were you?
About, I don't know,
like two?
12 or 13. I was like 12 or 13. This, I don't know, this was like 83 or 84, uh-huh. I guess.
Yeah. So,
but then I didn't take that name on as far as rapping and everything until about 88 or 89. So that's when I became J Spade.
So Snake, in a way, kind of did you a little favor there.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what happened to Snake?
I have no idea. To be honest, he's probably dead. He was in a motorcycle gang, and those
kind of a rough guy. So you're hoping he's good, but
I mean,
you never
I don't know.
Well, let's hope the best for Snake. Let's hope he's out there somewhere and he's doing all
right. And thank you, wherever you are.
Yeah. So we got Jay Spade or Jeremy. Do you prefer one or the other, or you don't care?
I don't care. I mean, a lot of people just call me Jay. And, you know, some people don't really know me on a personal level. So so they know me from DJing or whatever. And they just call me Jay Spade or just Spade, you know.
So tell me again the name of the city. Was it the
It was Greenville, South Carolina.
So you moved to Bowling Green when?
Well, I'm from Bowling Green.
Oh.
But what happened was me and my brother went to spend a summer with my dad in West Virginia. But while we were there, his job transferred him to South Carolina. So we moved with him, and then we just decided to stay there, you know, go to school there that year. So
yeah. So, you hung out for a while. Did you graduate from high school there or here in Bowling Green?
No, I moved back to Bowling Green in 85.
Okay, so you've been back. You've been back with us since 85.
Right.
Okay, so we're hanging out today talking to Jeremy Grogan, a.k.a. J Spade. Now, you did mention there's a lot of areas we can go with you, but you did mention DJing. Explain to everybody, when you say DJ, you're not DJ like what I do. You're other DJ. You're
That's exactly what I do.
That's right.
No, yeah, I DJ at parties and events, clubs, whatever.
Yeah, but your specialty is
my specialty is I like old school hip hop and old funk and everything. Like I said, I used to rap, so just always been heavy into hip hop ever since I first learned about it. But then through hip hop and through all the music that people sample, that opened me up to other types of music. So, so for a while I was kind of closed off because I didn't listen to anything but hip hop for a long time. But then, then I started to broaden my horizons, you know.
Yeah. So basically you're a true music fan. I mean, you have your favorites like we all do, but depending on the mood you're in, depends on kind of what you listen to, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, now you said funk. Throw out some names. So when we say funk, what are we talking about?
Talking about Funkadelic, James Brown, Sly Stone, Cameo, Gap Band.
Yeah.
Rufus Thomas. You know, all the good stuff.
The good stuff. You got that right. Now, hip hop, a little different than funk. Throw out some hip hop.
Okay, some of my favorite hip hop. Public Enemy.
Yep.
LL Cool J, Eric B and Rakim. My favorite rappers have always been Rakim and Melly Mel from the Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going back to the early days.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You like the Fat Boys, don't you?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Gotta love the Fat Boys.
What was it? A couple of years ago, one of the Record Store Days, they reissued one of their albums or all their albums in a pizza box.
Yes. Yeah. And I know one of the guys that was involved with that. He worked for that company that does a lot of the hip hop reissues. Yeah. So
I thought that was super cool. I love that. Yeah, yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to let them know a little bit later if they're interested. You're all about doing some DJing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned rapping. Let's talk a little bit about that. Now, I know at one time, I know of one tune in particular that I have played from time to time on Home Cooking, and occasionally it'll still pop up, BG Ballers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That song came about, I was getting ready to to go out of town to go to school for recording engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted something to take with me to, you know, show people what I do at the school.
An example.
Right.
Yeah.
So so I went to my friend Joel's house, Joel Hopper, who went on to, he actually produced the first Cage the Elephant album. That at the time, they were called Perfect Confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So he produced them. He also worked with Nappy Roots, Club Dub, Catawampus guys.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, I think he does more with video than audio. But he produced that song for me.
What year?
That was the beginning of 2002.
Now, let me ask you this. Is that available anywhere? I know that I took it and put it on that compilation we did back in like 2006 or 7, Tracks from the Trunk. But of course, that's, you know, we only made so many, and once they were gone, they were gone. But mm-hmm. other than that, did that ever come out anywhere?
No, it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't. It's online, I think mm-hmm. I still have it up on the SoundCloud page.
Yeah.
As well as some things that I had done back in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, with the guys that I had a group with at the time, we, you know, did a few songs together and I posted that stuff. So
if somebody's listening to this podcast right now and they're like, BG Ballers, I got to find that. Are you saying they can just go to YouTube and put in J Spade?
No,
BG Ballers?
Nothing on YouTube, but on SoundCloud.
SoundCloud. Okay.
Yeah. And I believe it's under J Spade / Rhythm Rug Productions.
Mm-hmm. All right. People listening, you should go check that out because that really is a good tune, man.
Thank you.
I like it a lot. Now, let's talk a little bit about, speaking of that tune, let's talk about some of the inspiration because you throw out a lot of names in that tune, a lot of areas around town and all.
Yeah. You know, BG, of course, is Bowling Green.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just wanted to talk about a lot of the places that me and my friends used to hang out at and, you know, things that, you know, people that I grew up with might listen to and, you know, they'd be like, hey, I know what he's talking about, mm-hmm. you know? So that's what that
maybe
was
lived
about.
In that area, maybe knew some of those people. Uh-huh. I mean, you talk about Delafield, you talk about, what is it?
Parker Bennett.
The Rep Center or Rec Center or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Parker Bennett Center and Delafield Community Center. Talk about Third Street.
Yeah. Just places you went and people you hung out with, things mm-hmm. you did.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, people out there listening right now, if you've never heard BG Ballers, you can check it out. It is a very cool tune. And pretty much any time I played it, I get at least one phone call going, where can I get that? I'm like, man, I don't think it's available. It seemed like you told me at one time you were thinking about, or you wanted to do like a 45 or something. Is that right?
Yeah, I wanted to. I mean, I'd always have, you know, wanted to put out a record because I've always loved records. I collect records. So,
sure. Yeah,
I've always wanted to put my own record out. It just hadn't happened.
Now, is that the only tune that you guys went in the studio and
yeah, that's
up?
That's the only thing that I ever did in the actual studio.
Uh-huh. That's the only thing. Well, you did good. You did good, my friend.
Yeah, and I've, you know, for many years, I've been trying to get myself back to rapping, and it just, I don't know, it hadn't happened yet. It's still in me.
Yeah.
It's gonna come out eventually, but it just hadn't. I mean I used to write raps all the time, and now it's like, you know, I might think up a clever line here and there, but it's, you know, it doesn't come out like it used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just haven't really had an opportunity to, you know, do any kind of performing or be on. Well, there have been a couple of people that had wanted me to do some songs with them.
Mm-hmm.
It never happened, though.
Yeah. Now, I've heard stories, and you may have told me some of these stories, but it seems like someone else kind of mentioned this to me. At one time, were you up on a stage at some clubs around town with a record player? Is that true?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. What's going on here? Where were you at? What were you doing?
That was Picasso's.
The original Picasso's?
Yes.
Okay.
How that came about, you know, me and my friends, we used to always hang out at Record Bar. And at the time, Michael Grimes of Grimey's fame was working at Record Bar. And he, whenever we would come in, he would have us rapping. For the customers.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So he...
Now, wait a minute. You were working there?
No, I never worked there.
He worked there.
He worked there.
And when you guys would stop in, he would just have you do that.
Right.
Okay. Want to make sure.
Right. And his favorite, I used to have a rap about a babysitter. And he would always say, do the babysitter rap.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah. So, but anyway, so... Then one day we were in there and he asked us if we wanted to do a show. Government Cheese was doing an all ages show at Picasso's.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked us to open for them.
What year we're talking here?
I think it was about 87.
I know we're bouncing around a little bit, but that's cool. So about 87 is when this was going down.
Yes. And yeah, it really wasn't a good experience. Well, first of all, this one guy, Tony, was part of the group, and we didn't have any original music to rap to, so Tony was supposed to bring some instrumental records for us to rap over.
Mm-hmm.
And but the turntable that he bought was that he brought with him was some little rinky dink kid's turntable. And Ken Smith of Picasso's saw it and he just cracked up laughing. He was like making fun of us. And the thing is, I told you my old rap name was Sergeant Rock, and to this day Ken Smith still calls me Sergeant Rock.
You know, I think in the past 4 or 5 years I've heard him say, or if we were talking about something and somehow you came up, but I'm almost positive I heard him say that.
Yeah he still calls me that. But anyway, so he laughed at us because of the turntable we were using. And my mom and her friend showed up. And I just got real embarrassed and shy and everything. So, you know, I actually had them leave because I was like, I can't do this with y'all here. And, you know, it just wasn't a good performance.
Is this the first time that you were ever on stage?
No, not the first time, but I don't know. It probably should have been the last because it just wasn't. It wasn't good. And the thing is, when I read the Cheese Chronicles years later by Tommy Womack, and he's telling all these, you know, bad stories of all these shows and different things, and I was like, you know, I was scared. I was like, oh, no, he's going to talk about us and that show. But he... obviously, he went to therapy and had it blocked from his memory or something, because we didn't make the book. So
yeah, that's a pretty good story. So just one night, he said, "Come down and do this," and y'all kind of did it, but it didn't go so well, and that was it. And that was your kind of premiere, and I guess the only time at Picasso's.
Yes.
Now you mentioned our group. Who was the group? Who was the name of the band? What name of the group? Who was in the group?
The group was called the Casanova Crew.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it had been me, Sean Duncan, Victor Jarvis, and Tony Miller.
Mm-hmm.
But then Sean quit the group. So at the time of that Picasso's show, it was me, Victor, and Tony.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, we got a DJ, Marty Hayes, a.k.a. Money One. But then Tony and Victor left and did their own thing. And then Marty and I became Uzi Productions. Mm-hmm. And the other music that I said that I had posted online that was from the 80s was actually the stuff I do with Marty is Uzi Productions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, now we know that story. Like I said, I don't know if you told me that story or if someone else did, but I was like, wait a minute. Seems like I heard something about you being on stage, and I was thinking it was Picasso's with a record player. Another question or two about that experience. How long were you guys on stage? How many songs did you do?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. We, you know, maybe on 20 or 30 minutes.
Yeah.
If the crowd even let us last that long, I don't know. There may have been some tomatoes thrown.
I doubt it. So that happened, what, 1987?
Yeah, I believe so.
Any pictures, audio from that?
No. Thank God.
You wouldn't like to have a picture of yourself on the stage of Picasso's? That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. It would. But
at the time, I can understand. But now, you know, so many years later, like, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah,
you know?
It would.
Yeah. Now, something else that I know is that you were on TV.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Tell us about that. Commercial,
about
I believe.
The commercial, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Okay. Let's see. My senior year of high school, there was a contest between all the high schools, which at the time was just Warren Central, Warren East, and Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. But they had a contest between the schools. They wanted someone to write a rap about wearing seat belts. So my science teacher, this little bitty woman named Miss Morgan, she wrote a rap. And she asked our the assistant principal who would be good to do this rap. Mm-hmm. And so he brought it to me and my friend Reggie Manning. And so it was me, Reggie, and Victor, who was in my group. Victor was the beatbox. So me and Reggie were rapping, and Victor was beatboxing. Mm-hmm. And so we shot a little video, and they entered it into the contest. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, I graduated from high school and had forgotten all about that. And it was about a year later. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting in the living room, and there's a knock at the door, and it's a policeman.
Uh-huh.
And the policeman says that he's looking for me, and he's like, yeah, you need to come with me. And then I look out on the porch, and my friend Reggie was standing there.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, my God, what's going on?
Uh-huh.
You know, I was like, we didn't do anything.
Uh-huh.
You know? But the policeman was saying, come with us. So I did. I didn't have any idea what was going on or what was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
But he took us over to WBKO, and I'm like, what are we doing here? And then finally Reggie said, remember that seatbelt rap that we did? And I'm like, yeah. He said, well, we won the contest. They want us to make a commercial. So you know, in the original, Victor was on the beatbox, but he had moved away. So to replace him, we got Johnny Blissett playing live drums for it. And so Chris Allen set us up in front of the green screen, and we had Johnny in the back playing drums, and me and Reggie out in the front saying a rap about wearing seatbelts. And they had, you know, since we were in front of a green screen, they had this scenery in the back of, you know, cars and policemen directing traffic and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, that was kind of cool.
So what year did you graduate?
I graduated in 89.
So this is like 90.
Yeah.
The summer of 90 or something like
that.
Yeah. So did you actually see the commercial on TV?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they ran it for a while.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I used to have a copy of it on a DVD, but I don't know where it is anymore.
Is that something that we can see somewhere?
Not that I'm aware of, because I've tried to look it up online before, and I haven't been able to find it.
Yeah,
but you know, if I ever track it down, then I might post it up.
Sure, you should, man. You should be proud of your past, my friend.
All right.
Something else you mentioned, Rhythm Rug. What's okay. that all about? Rhythm Rug Productions.
Rhythm Rug Productions. You know, like I said, I went to school for recording engineering. That's,
you know what? Before we get into Rhythm Rug, let's talk about recording engineering.
Okay.
Now, why did you want to pursue that? What made you want to do that?
Well, that all came from being a rapper and everything. And it's like whenever I was working with somebody that was supposed to be making music for me or recording me or something would always fall through. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I want to learn how to do this stuff myself.
You want to know what's on each side of the glass.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's what I wanted to do, was to be a recording engineer and, mm-hmm. and I guess ultimately a producer.
Sure.
But it didn't really work out for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after school, I took a job at WBKO to run audio just to have some hands-on experience.
Sure.
But then, you know, just over the years, I just got farther and farther away from it. Mm-hmm. You know, I did some internships at a couple of studios in Nashville,
mm-hmm.
but of course, internships usually don't pay.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I had to get a paying job.
You said, "Look, I'm a full on adult. I got bills to pay."
Right, and I had kids. You know,
yeah,
so
exactly.
So yeah, I had to get something that paid. So just, you know, over the years, I just got farther and farther away from it.
Now, where'd you go to school for that?
The recording workshop, mm-hmm. in Chillicothe, Ohio.
How long were you in school for that, or how long did you go?
Just about like 2 months. Mm-hmm. It's like a crash course.
Yeah.
You know, you're in class like early in the morning till late at night.
Yeah.
You know, you're just in class all day long.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like they just try to cram all this information into your head in this short span of time,
mm-hmm.
which at the time I thought was a good idea. I thought, well, I'll get through with school real quick and I'll get out and I'll get a job at a studio, and you know, but like I said, it didn't work out that way.
Yeah. So you went to school for some recording engineering. Is it Rhythm Rug was after that?
Well, the name, I had the name before that. Actually, let's see, this was, I guess, late 90s, maybe, I'm thinking around 97, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I was at home making a mixtape, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I had this this record, Can I Kick It, by A Tribe Called Quest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a line in there where they say, wipe your feet really good on the rhythm rug.
Mm-hmm.
And so that line played, and I just kept cueing it back and cutting and scratching it. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to use that name, Rhythm Rug. And so I put out a series of mixtapes, mm-hmm. called Rhythm Rug. And then, you know, I wanted, you know, a few years later, was wanting to be a recording engineer. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, might have my own record label. It was going to be Rhythm Rug Records.
Sure.
And then I would produce as Rhythm Rug Productions.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, none of that really happened.
Has happened yet.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So, but... But I do DJ, mm-hmm. so I just decided to use that name as you know, for what I do as a DJ, as Rhythm Rug Productions.
Yeah. I have a few of your tapes, and I think even some CDs that you've made, Rhythm Rug. Is that something that you do for people, or just something you do for yourself, put those mixtapes together?
It was usually just something that I did for myself. I mean, there were some times when people would ask me to do something for them and they would want certain types of things on there,
mm-hmm.
and I would do that. But But usually it was just something I wanted to do for myself, you know. You know, sometimes I would sell the tapes. Sometimes I'd just give them away. Mm-hmm. I mean, over the last few years, I've been digging up some of the old tapes and posting some of my old mixes online.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a spot online somewhere that we can send folks to check out some of your stuff?
Yes, some of that stuff is on that SoundCloud account, and then also on MixCloud, and it's the same thing. It's JSpade/Rhythm Rug Productions.
Spell rhythm, because some folks can't spell it.
RHYTHM.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. Some of the stuff that I get comes across my desk, and rhythm's in there, and it's spelled all kinds of crazy ways. So everybody check that out.
The funny thing is, my email address is actually RTHMRG, which is Rhythm Rug without the vowels.
Uh-huh.
And some people, they look at that. Even, you know, they know about Rhythm Rug. They know what I do. But they can still read that and not figure out what it is.
Yeah. But they're just like, it's some letters and then the word rugs tacked on there on the end.
Mm-hmm.
So now we talked a little bit about, you mentioned your record collection. Let's talk about record collecting. Hmm. How many records do you think you have? Have you gone through and counted them many times?
No, not in years have I counted them, because I've got so many. Yeah,
thousands?
Yes, thousands.
You think you have like 3,000 or 4,000?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Now, where did you get all these records? You just go to a bunch of yard sales, or what happened?
Well, yeah, some of them I got at yard sales. Uh-huh. Some at record stores, you know, thrift shops, just any place that sells records.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna look at them and hopefully find something that I'll want.
What are you looking for when you go record shopping?
Well, you know, like I said, I'm really into hip hop, so I do look a lot for that stuff, especially, you know, some of the older stuff, which I might not have. But then also, I look for a lot of different funk and soul, jazz things that different people have sampled. But also, I look for things that I might want to sample myself. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I haven't really made any music, but, I mean, I play around with it. I still want to do something. So, you know, I've got a bunch of samples at home. Someday I'm going to do something with them.
Stuff that you've got ready to roll, you just don't know where you're going to put them. Kind of built up of kind of a backlog of them. Is it true that probably maybe Parliament, one of the most sampled bands ever?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Let's talk about that. Parliament Funkadelic, however you want to go. What's some, you know, some records in that particular group you think, you know, some of my favorites, if you want to check those guys out? What's a good one? Pick one.
Okay. One?
Well, what? Okay, we'll give you three, man, because they got a lot of records.
They got a lot of records.
Yeah. Parliament Funkadelic, explain, because that's like two different bands. A couple of different bands all combined in one, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
History lesson.
Yeah.
First, there was a doo-wop group called the Parliaments in the early 60s. But then...
Who featured who?
George Clinton.
That's right.
Of course, he's the mastermind behind all of this.
That's right.
But then he actually wrote for Motown at the time. But then a few years later, he put a band together called the Funkadelics. And it was more of an acid rock kind of thing starting out. I mean, over time they got funkier, but the early stuff was, you know, like some Hendrix or Sly Stone kind of stuff. And,
yeah.
You know.
Well, that stuff was kind of happening trippy. Then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was of the time, you know.
So we got the Parliaments, and then that kind of morphed into Funkadelic.
Right. And then George Clinton wanted to do something else, and so he brought the name back of Parliament, not the Parliaments, but just Parliament. And then put that stuff out with a different record label. you know, so. So he had.
That's Casablanca, wasn't it?
Yeah, Casablanca and Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he had stuff going on both of those places.
Yeah.
Well, Funkadelic first came out on Westbound.
Yeah. Westbound, another band that was on Westbound, early Ohio Players.
Ohio Players.
I love me some Ohio
I
Players.
I know you do, because you're a jive turkey.
I love it. Oh, man, I love that song. I think that's my all-time favorite Ohio Players tune.
Well,
I mean, there's some. I love that. I love Fop. I love I Want to Be Free.
Oh, man. That's good.
Far East Mississippi. I mean, that's good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, enough about my favorite funk band. Let's get back to Funkadelic and Parliament. Let's go on with the history lesson.
Okay, so then, you know, he's got the two bands going on, Funkadelic and Parliament. And then they had different offshoots. They had Bootsy's Rubber Band, which featured the bassist, Bootsy Collins. Mm-hmm. He had the Brides of Funkenstein.
Yeah.
You know, just few different things going on. And then, but then over the years, he kind of brought everything together and made it Parliament Funkadelic,
right,
or P-Funk.
P-Funk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, what are some songs? We'll get to the records in a second because I know I ask you that. But some songs that folks say they've either heard of or probably some of the most sampled of their tunes.
Well, of course, there's Make My Funk the P-Funk. I Wants to Get Funked Up. Then One Nation Under a Groove, Not Just Knee Deep, Flashlight,
yep.
Bop Gun.
Probably Flashlight, the one that it would probably, oh yeah.
Yeah,
trigger,
Flashlight
trigger most.
Was, I don't know, probably their biggest crossover success.
Tear the Roof.
Yeah.
That one was,
Tear the Roof Off Them.
Yeah, that one was a pretty big deal too.
Yeah.
So now let's go back to some vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of your favorites from those guys.
From those guys?
Mm-hmm.
Maggot Brain.
Mm-hmm.
Maggot Brain, that's a good one. America Eats Its Young. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, Uncle Jam Wants You.
Uh-huh. See, yeah. you're picking some of the, I won't say obscure, but some that most, if you know anything about Parliament or Funkadelic, that would probably not be your first. You probably focus more on like Funkenstein or Mothership or some of that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. Then that kind of like the Casablanca years,
right?
Yeah. Well, you would see them everywhere.
The thing is the Parliament side of things was more poppy than the Funkadelic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the stuff that, you know, people might know more of.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when those records were coming out, I would say like the mid to late 70s and maybe, well, no, that's about right. About the mid 70s to the late 70s, you'd see Parliament, or you'd see the Parliament albums, you'd see Village People, as far as that label, Casablanca. Kiss was hot.
Kiss.
You'd see some other, like what the Ritchie family.
Donna Summer.
Donna Summer was huge on the Casablanca label then. Was the Ritchie family, they were with Casablanca, weren't they?
Were they? I'm not sure.
But I mean, you would see, I mean, the Casablanca had a lot of money back then. They were making a lot of money off of Kiss.
Yeah.
And so I remember when I was growing up, and you go like, because I lived on the air base for a while.
Wasn't Barry Manilow on Casablanca?
I don't know. I don't think so. But okay. I mean, I don't know.
Maybe.
But you would see those records everywhere. You'd sit there and see the Kiss record, and then you'd see some dude with like his legs sticking out of a spaceship, and you're like, what's this?
Yeah.
You know, where I see the records, right? Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's the stuff that kind of hits me when I was that age. I would see the Kiss records, and then I would see their records right there next to them. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff. Right. So are those guys one of your top bands?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Top bands. We mentioned some of your favorites a little bit earlier. Well, we talked about some of the artists that you play, some of the music that you play when you're out and you're DJing,
mm-hmm.
as far as R&B, we talked a little bit about funk.
Mm-hmm.
Some of your favorite artists. Doesn't have to be a group. Could be just a solo artist, however you want to put it.
Okay. Well, my all-time favorite artist is Gil Scott-Heron.
I know you are a fan, and that's number one.
That is. It really is.
Yeah.
That's somebody who started out as a poet, mm-hmm. and you know, recorded some poetry albums in the late 60s, but then started putting stuff over instrumentation, mm-hmm. and then you know, over time he became a full-fledged jazz artist.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's my favorite. And Bob Marley, mm-hmm. I like a lot. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Give me one more.
Let's see. Earth, Wind, and Fire.
There.
I like
that. Oh, yeah. That is some good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some really good stuff. Yeah. Now, since we mentioned those, and I like to do this sometimes, I like to get people's kind of what you're into. Those three that you mentioned, what's a release by each of those three that if somebody goes, hey, I want to check out some Earth, Wind, and Fire, you go, check out this album. They have all this other good stuff, but start with this one. Do that with those three you just named.
Okay. Gil Scott-Heron, I would say First Light of a New Day. That's a good album. Or It's Your World, which is a live album, but that's my favorite live album.
Mm-hmm. Of all time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that one you listen to every couple of weeks? You put on and let it run through?
Yeah, pretty often.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Let's see. Who else did I say?
You mentioned Earth, Wind, and Fire. You mentioned Bob Marley.
Yeah. Bob Marley. Well, it's Catch a Fire. That's a good one. Exodus mm-hmm. is great.
Yeah. Do you have the original Catch a Fire, which looks like a giant lighter?
I'm not sure. I think I've got it.
Yeah. I bet you do.
I think I do, but I'm really not sure now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Bob Marley, Catch a Fire, Exodus. Earth, Wind, and Fire. What about those
Earth,
guys?
Wind, and Fire. I'm actually drawing a blank on the names of their albums. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
The Greatest Hits.
There you go.
Just get that and start with that.
Yeah.
And learn the hits.
Yeah.
And then go back to some of the other
then
tunes.
Do your research.
Exactly. And, you know, because a lot of those groups that we've talked about and mentioned, if people know anything about them, they probably know at least the hits.
Right.
And the hits are cool. But there's a lot of other good stuff in there.
Yeah, got to dig a little deeper.
Got to dig, exactly. So back to your record collection. So when you're out looking for records, you're just kind of looking for some of your favorites. Is there anything that you maybe try to get a hold of for your DJing?
Yeah, because there's certain things that I have in mind, you know, things that I don't have mm-hmm. or something I might just want an extra copy of. So I'll look for things like that. And then sometimes as far as like when I'm looking at like soul or jazz stuff, I like to read the musicians and the producers that are involved, see if any names pop out, you know, sure. because, you know, I might not know this particular artist, but they've worked with somebody that I like,
You know,
it might be a certain bassist or drummer that I'm familiar with. So
sure.
I'm thinking, you know, okay, you know, want to check this out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just things like that.
A lot of people probably don't think about that. If you like the way a particular album sounds, sometimes mm-hmm. you could check out someone you're not familiar with if mm-hmm. the production is similar as
right.
far as who's doing the work. Very cool.
And something else, like if I'm looking at like old records from the 60s or 70s, just look at the musicians, mm-hmm. you know, see the makeup of the band and just look at the way they're dressed, the mm-hmm. hairstyles, everything, just to kind of get an idea of what this might sound like, you know.
I never thought about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because you see certain types of people and you're like, oh, these guys look like, you know, they might make some good music,
uh-huh.
you know.
I never thought
about that. People
with
the big afros and bell bottoms, and you know, yeah,
you think that could work,
right?
Okay, so everybody, there's your
or just look at the instruments.
Uh-huh.
You see some horns or some congas or percussion.
Uh huh.
You know, like, hey, this might be good.
All right, so percussion, bell bottoms, and afros. You're saying it's a winner, brother.
Right. Yeah.
There we go. Talking about local music a little bit, we talked a little bit earlier about BG Ballers. Mm-hmm. Have you worked with any local artists, or are you tight with any local artists that have come up in the past 10, 15, 20 years?
Well, of course there was Nappy Roots, mm-hmm. the biggest hip-hop name to ever come out of Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. And, well, in their early days, before they got signed to a major label, well, I knew one of the members. I'd known him since he was young, mm-hmm. and he actually we talked about Delafield.
Sure.
Well, there was a DJ Rockwell mm-hmm. used to DJ there, and he would let at a certain point in the night. He would throw on instrumentals and let different guys get up on the microphone and rap for everybody.
Cool.
And I was one of those.
Kind of like open mic night.
Yeah. So, Big V from Nappy Roots, his sisters used to sneak him in there because he was younger than everybody. But he had told me one time that, he remembered seeing me rap with the guys at the... doing that. So when they were getting started, this guy that lived behind me said he was their manager. So some of those guys were over at his place one time, and we had talked about me doing a song with them, but it never happened. The thing is, the song that they wanted me to work on was talking about like robbing banks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I just didn't really like the direction it was going.
Weren't really feeling the lyrics, huh?
Yeah. So yeah. I was like, yeah, I don't really want to do this. Mm-hmm. So I never ended up doing anything with them.
So you mentioned WBKL a little bit earlier. What did mm-hmm. you do there?
I started off there doing audio because, like I said, I had just gotten out of recording school. I wanted to get some hands-on experience. So I was doing audio, but then I got cross-trained to run camera, and eventually I became a master control operator. Mm-hmm. So those were the things that I did there.
Yeah. So you did that for a while. How long were you at WBKL?
About 3 years.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about some of your favorite artists a few moments ago. How about some new artists? Is there anybody out there new that you're into?
Hmm.
Somebody that's new to the music scene. Well, I mean, we all kind of listen to what we grew up with, but every once in a while you find something, you're like, you know what? I dig that. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a favorite and it's a newer band.
Right.
So like who?
Well, to be honest, I don't listen to a lot of the newer hip hop stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't mind me putting a plug in here,
do it.
When I do want to listen to new hip hop music, I check out Southern Vanguard Radio.
Okay,
so look that up online with DJ John Doe and Eddie Meeks. Anyway, so that's
just go plug it again.
Yeah,
do it again.
Yeah, John Doe and Eddie Meeks, Southern Vanguard Radio.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where you go to listen to all the new underground hip hop music.
Sure.
But as far as a new artist that I'm really into a lot, I can't really think of anyone top of my head. I mean,
past 5 or 10 years, can't think of anybody, huh?
Let's see. I like stuff like Mos Def. Uh-huh. And Common. I mean, those have been around longer than 5 or 10 years. Yeah. But
seems like Common's doing a lot of acting these days.
Yeah, he does more acting than anything else.
Yeah. Now, we're talking a little bit about some of your favorite bands. We kind of went over that a little bit. You did work a bit in the industry down in Nashville. I think you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit. What you did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I worked for a company called Landmark Digital, which was owned by BMI.
Uh-huh.
And so we reported to them, and basically, the job was listening to the radio.
Yeah. Because this is something...
That was a large part of the job.
This is probably something that people are like, you did what? Explain what this is all about. You actually did sit and listen to the radio and you got paid.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
BMI is a performance rights company. So they collect money for, you know, when your music is played on the radio or in a movie or TV or whatever. And radio stations are supposed to report to them about what music they've played so that the, the proper payments are made.
Sure.
But they don't always report accurately.
Uh-huh.
So they had people like myself. We had a team of people. Everybody had their own specialty. You know, we had our rock guys, our jazz guys, country, gospel, and myself. My specialty was what they called the urban music, mm-hmm. which was the hip hop and the R&B stuff and reggae. When I started there, I think I was the only one that did those types of music. Mm-hmm. But eventually it became like a team of three people.
Yeah.
But that was pretty much the best job ever. Because, like I said, you listen to the radio. The thing is, a lot of people know about Shazam.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the people that I worked for created the technology that Shazam uses. They licensed the technology to Shazam. So uh-huh. the stuff that we were doing, we would listen to the radio and identify songs. And, we go in on the computer and tag it, say, this is what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And once we did that, our computer software would pick up the algorithms and it would recognize the song. So we didn't have to go in and identify it every time. Because once we did it, it would identify it on its own.
Well, it knew so, this is this.
Right. Out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what we were doing actually fed Shazam. We're the ones who actually gave Shazam its information. So so when you pull up Shazam on your phone and you identify a song, chances are it's something that me or somebody I work with, we did that.
That's pretty interesting.
And a funny story.
Tell it.
Yeah. We had had a Christmas party one year. Then afterwards, a bunch of us went to a local bar. So we're sitting there at the bar. Our boss, Joe McKesson, a.k.a. Opera Joe,
mm-hmm.
he was sitting at the bar, and there was some drunk guy sitting there, and this guy pulls his phone out and pulls up Shazam on his phone. He says, look what I can do, and he identifies a song. So Joe says, you see all those people right there? He's like, we did that.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny.
So there's a little backstory there. You had something to do with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something else that I think people would think is pretty cool is a job that you had down in Nashville at a pressing plant.
Yes. As a record collector, I've always been fascinated with records and, the creation of the records. Mm-hmm. So I took a job at a pressing plant. I was, I had lived in Nashville for a while, then moved back to Bowling Green and was trying to move back to Nashville. So I took that job.
Mm-hmm. The name of the place?
United Record Pressing.
That's right. We all know that one because we know one of their biggest customers.
Third Man.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, so that was a cool job.
Uh-huh.
Just to be there and witness the creation of so many great albums.
So what'd you see? What'd you do? How do they make those crazy splatter vinyl? Tell us anything you know.
Well, to do that, you know, the vinyl that they use, it comes in these little pellets. And they, you know, they it's melted down into what's called a biscuit. And then the biscuit gets flattened. It's like smashed flat. And it, that's, you know, how the record is made. Now, the splatter stuff is they take different colored pellets and just, you know, mix them up together.
Yeah.
So that's how you do that.
But there are little pellets, and then they make the biscuit, then they flatten the biscuit, and when the biscuit's flattened, it's got side one and side two of the record, and it's flattened it out just like that.
Yeah.
They trim it up.
Yep.
Put the label on. Hopefully the label's straight. What if the label's not straight?
Then one of the inspectors, which is what I did there, then they should see that and pull that out, set it aside. That is, that's not supposed to go through, because that, it shouldn't pass inspection. That shouldn't make it out to the public, but sometimes they do.
Yeah,
you know. So we've all got records like that.
Oh yeah, the collectible records, I guess we'd say.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do with the records that get pulled out?
The ones that we can't use, they would usually go to a machine, a dinking machine, and make a dink. Is what they call it, but it punches out the center part of the record, the part with the label. So all the surrounding vinyl can be salvaged and ground up and reused.
Yeah.
But they got to get that label off, because you don't want paper.
Oh yeah.
Fragments in your vinyl.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, it won't play right.
Yeah.
So you don't want stuff stuck in your vinyl.
So did you see anything interesting when you worked there? Did anybody interesting come through there or check out some records? Did you hear any interesting stories? Anything you can share with us?
Jack White.
Yeah, he came through there?
Oh, yeah.
One day when you were there?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I mean, he just walked around, him and his security people. You know, they just walked through, you know, looking over everything.
Were they having something pressed and they were checking out what you guys were doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, we always had something going for Third Man.
Yeah.
Probably not so much anymore, because he opened up his own record plant up in Detroit.
Yeah.
But I mean, I still know some people there, and they do still press up some stuff for Third Man. But
yeah.
But
so did you actually meet Jack White, or he was across the room one day?
Yeah, across the room.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, they're like, so-and-so's coming through, but you're not allowed to talk to him.
Yeah, just leave him alone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't make a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you met anybody famous?
Yeah. Who have I met? Who have I met famous?
I know you met Ice-T.
Oh, yeah. I met Ice-T. Who else have I met?
Chuck.
Oh, yeah. Chuck D. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm answering your question,
man. I know it, man. You know more about me than I do, apparently.
It's because I love you, man. And we've done some cool stuff together.
Right?
Yeah. So, anybody else?
Who else have I met? Well, I met Gil Scott-Heron.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah, it was super cool, but also super sad.
Oh.
Because if you know anything about him, you know, he had a long history with drugs.
Yeah.
And when I saw him, he was doing a free outdoor show down at the river in Nashville.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there, you know, talking about how much I love Gil Scott-Heron.
Yeah.
And this guy behind me says, "Do you want to meet him?" So this guy was a poet, and he was like the opening act. So, you know, he's like, "You want to meet him?" I'm like, "Yeah." So he takes me over there, and the sad thing is, he was just so out of it on drugs. It's like he didn't even lift his head to look at me, and he, you know, just like limply shook my hand.
Yeah.
And he just kind of like mumbled something.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I was thinking, because of that, I was like, well, this show isn't going to be any good, you know, because of his condition he was in.
Uh-huh.
But once he got behind that piano, it's like he flicked a switch, man, because he just turned on then, and it was a great show.
Yeah. Well, he could have been in some kind of zone or something when you
could
met
have.
Him. Yeah.
Could have.
Yeah. They say a lot of times when you meet performers, and it's not really recommended you meet them before the show, because they're, I guess some of them have to get in a zone or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a performer, so I don't know, but I've heard that before. So that could have been what
you met a few. So.
I've met a couple, but maybe that's
it. Could have been.
Yeah.
Could have been.
But still, that's cool that you did get to meet him. It maybe wasn't the best encounter, but you did get to meet him and you got to shake his hand. So that's kind of cool.
Great.
Yeah. What year was that?
That was about, I think, like 2000 to 2001, some around that time.
Down in Nashville.
Yeah.
He's no longer with us, right?
No, he died a few years ago.
Yeah, I was thinking that he passed away.
Yeah.
When you mentioned him earlier as your top artist, I was going to ask you if you ever had a chance to meet him.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad we came back to that. So that's very cool. Because, see, that is kind of a nice wrap-up. But...
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to that, I do want to ask you this.
Okay.
Do you have any plans for the future? Is anything new going on with Jeremy Grogan, a.k.a. Jay Spade? Are you looking for gigs? Anybody need a DJ? You're up for that?
Yeah. I'm always looking for gigs. Because I love DJing.
Yeah.
Well, I know one thing is later this month. Mm-hmm. It's August 25th at A-Frame. They're actually having an art show, but I'll be DJing during the art show. And then they've got Waco Bell, which is a local hip-hop group. They will be performing, and then I will be DJing again after their show. So that's coming up later this month. Then in October, I'll be DJing a Halloween show with the Captain Midnight Band, also at A-Frame.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a couple of shows coming up. If folks are listening right now, real quick, we talked about it earlier, your specialty, what you do DJ-wise.
Yeah, I play all vinyl. Mm-hmm. I don't do, you know, digital or CDs or anything. It's all vinyl because, like I said, I'm a record collector, and I like to... share my collection, you know.
Nice.
I got a lot of records, so I want to let me play them for you. So so it's all vinyl, and I specialize in old school hip-hop and funk and soul music, and occasionally I get to do a reggae show. You know, I used to, there was a reggae band I used to DJ with in Nashville for a while. And then there was one here, a band from Nashville that would, Roots of Rebellion, they would come here and play, and they would always, you know, they would request me to DJ for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, occasionally I get to do some reggae, which I also enjoy.
Okay. Now, before we let you go, one other thing, any other websites you want to plug, anything where they can hear you, see you, anything?
Like I said, there's a SoundCloud and MixCloud, which is JSpade/Rhythm Rug Productions, and also on Facebook. I've got my personal page, which, you know, is Jeremy J. Spade Grogan, but then I also have a page which is also JSpade/Rhythm Rug Productions.
Okay. Everybody check that out. Now, the microphone's right there at you. Do you have anything that you want to put out there? Say hello to anybody? Anything at all that you would like to say? It's up to you right now.
Ah, well, I'll say hi to my kids. my daughter is going to be getting married here in a couple of weeks.
Yes, congratulations.
Yes.
She's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
we love Allison.
Yep, and my son actually He still got, I don't know, probably four or five different bands that he's in. One band, Active Impalement, they just put out a new album. So check that out. I call it death metal. He calls it punk, but you know, it's cool if you're into that kind of stuff. Check them out. And it, yeah, see, that's the thing we were talking about. I would like to be on record someday. My son has actually done it.
Yeah, well, he might have you on a record someday.
He might.
Yeah.
He's put out several 45s with different bands he's been in.
Yeah.
And now a whole album. So, yeah, very proud.
Yeah. Well, see right there, I gave you an opportunity to say what you wanted to, and you went for the kids. That's a proud papa right there.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Always proud of them.
Well, Mr. Jay Spade, you're a lot more interesting than you thought you were, aren't you?
I guess.
Yeah. All right. That's going to wrap up this evening, this afternoon, wherever we play this edition of the Sound Atlas. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Absolutely.